Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Hello everyone, it's Jesse Green here. Welcome back to SavvyDentist.com and to the Savvy Dentist Podcast. It's wonderful to have your company for another episode of the show. Now, for those practice owners that really want to grow and scale their business, you'll understand that growing and scaling the business requires new skills of us as leaders, because the growth of the business is correlated to the growth of us as the leaders of our business. So, to put it very succinctly, for the business to grow, first, we must grow. And part of that growth of us as leaders is developing the right mindset that's going to allow us to have the right mental attributes, the right mindsets, the right views that's going to really drive the business growth. And my guest today, Julia Plimsler, is an expert when it comes to mindset. Julia has grown, scaled, and sold businesses of her own. She's an expert at that, and she knows exactly what mindset we need to adopt in order to be able to do that. She's the author of several books. The first book is called Go Big Now, which is a best-selling book, and it's all about essential practices to help you develop that mindset. And she's the author of another book called Million Dollar Women. And so she's a really knowledgeable guest. She's got a lot of insights. And in our conversation, we spoke about the essential practices that we as business owners need to adopt and embrace so that we can grow. We need to understand where we fall short and how we trip ourselves up, and we discussed that in detail. So if you want to grow your practice, if you want to scale your practice, we need to do the inner work first. And this episode with Julia really touches on that and really goes into depth to explore the things to understand so that you can get that mindset right that's going to provide the foundation and the pathway for future growth, future scaling, so that you can have that business that's going to give you the time freedom, the financial freedom, and all the things that you strive for. So it's about getting this work right now, getting the foundations in place, and really understanding that if we can step up our own leadership skills, we can build the practice that we've always wanted. So I hope you enjoy this conversation with Julia. It's a really rich and meaningful conversation, tons of wisdom in there. And as I always say, do have a pen and paper handy, because some of the things she shares, you're going to want to capture and apply in your own practice today. So here's Julia. Julia Plimsler, thank you so much for taking the time to come and join us all the way from New York. How are you today? Or this evening, I should say, for you.
Well, yes, it's evening for me, morning for you. I'm so happy to have this time with you. Thanks for having me on.
Well, thank you for staying up late. I know evenings are not normally your work day so much, so I appreciate you staying up a bit later to come and talk to us in a hopefully a reasonably friendly time. So not perfect, but we'll make the most of it. So thank you.
We're going to have a great time. It's totally going to be worth it. I can tell already.
We are going to have a great time. Now, before we do get into things, Julia, I was reading around your website and I understand that you are an avid scuba diver. And yes. I imagine this pandemic has put your scuba diving plans on hold a little bit. But I'm curious.
It gave me lots of time to research my next trips.
Well, that was what I was going to ask you. Where are you going as soon as the borders open up? Where are you planning to travel to?
Well, I'm looking at Cozumel in Mexico. Mm-hmm. I have not yet scuba dived in Indonesia. And I also have not scuba dived the Great Barrier Reef. I've been to Australia twice, but did not make it to the Great Barrier Reef. So that is high on the list.
Okay. I have to tell you a little story, actually, Juliet. This is one of my more embarrassing stories in my life. But when I was 16, I was doing my scuba course. And I think I'm the only person that I'm aware of, at least, who's broken their leg learning to scuba dive.
And
no, it's ridiculous.
How did you do that?
It's a totally ridiculous accident. When I was 16, I was about 52, 53 kilos, so 110, 120 pounds. So not much of me. And what happened was I was on the edge of the swimming pool and had all the gear on, all the gear and no idea, as they say. And I went to move sideways and the weight on my back, I toppled over and broke my leg. Didn't even fall in the water.
Oh my goodness, that's hilarious. I have heard, if it makes you feel any better, that most accidents in scuba diving happen at the surface, not underwater, as you would think. But they didn't say anything about a poolside. You might be in your own category on that one.
I think I've got a category of one there. My wife loves to refer to that as a special kind of accident that only Jesse could have.
But you persevered, so that shows a strong mindset.
Persevered.
So I wanted to ask you a little bit about scuba and particularly what it's taught you about life, what it's taught you about your business, what insights it's given you about life and business.
Oh, goodness, so much. I'm so glad you asked. The truth is, whenever I go scuba diving, I have this wave of fear and panic because, you know, you are putting a little tuna can of air on your back and going, you know, 60 or 100 feet underwater with possibly people eating sea life. So it is a little bit scary, but I think the biggest, most exciting things in life are a little scary, right? And so it's a constant reminder that you have to train that muscle, that mindset muscle, to push through the fear. And each time I do it, you know, I push through the fear. And then once I'm underwater, I'm just in heaven and cannot believe I might have missed out on this opportunity just because I was afraid of getting back into the unknown, right? It's very much about being in a situation that's not comfortable. You know, it's not comfortable to feel like, oh, I can't breathe any which way I want to breathe. I have to breathe through this tube, right? I have to follow these rules or else I might die. That's not entirely comfortable, but the rewards are huge. And I don't know about for you, but for me, I always feel like it's the closest I'll ever get to walking on the moon or on another planet. Maybe my children will go to Mars with Richard Branson or who knows who, but I'm not signing up for that. I feel like having scuba dived is my kind of extraterrestrial experience and I just absolutely adore it.
That's fantastic. Do you find the peace and quiet enjoyable?
I do. And you know, it's funny, I'm not a huge horoscope person. I'm probably the least woo-woo mindset person you'll ever meet, but I am a Pisces and I do think there might be something to it. I just feel so comfortable and happy in the water. And I do know people who, you know, you even say scuba diving to them and they're like, oh God, no, don't even talk to me about that. That's the scariest thing I've ever thought of. Whereas I'm just incredibly happy in the water. And the other business parallel that I've noticed is that when you're going down scuba diving, you don't go on your own. You have to have a buddy and you often are in a group of five or six. And before you go down, you meet with the group and the leader, right? The scuba instructor, and you have to plan the dive. You talk about what's going to happen when you get down there. You work out the hand signals. You talk about what to do in an emergency. You make sure everyone has the same communication because once you're down there, right, you can't speak. You have to communicate through a set of sign language that you all share. And it's called planning the dive. And then when you go down there, you must dive the plan, right? You can't suddenly decide, oh, I'm going to do a whole different thing. No, you have to dive the plan. And that's such an amazing parallel to building a business, right? Once a year, you need to set the strategy, plan the dive, get the whole team on board, make sure everybody speaks the same language, make sure everyone knows what to do in an emergency, and then dive the plan, right? You can't suddenly halfway through the year decide, oh, a whole different strategy, unless you all come together and make that change together. But that's what sinks, not to keep using the sea metaphors, a lot of companies is that they don't plan the dive. And even if they do plan the dive, they don't dive the plan.
Yeah, fantastic. Actually, I really like that metaphor. I think that's a fantastic metaphor. I've never really thought about it in that respect, but it's a really, really strong point. Now, you are the author of a couple of books, but particularly Go Big Now is your most recent book. And I wanted to ask you, what was the impetus behind writing the book? What was it that you really kind of had an itch to say about mindset and going big? Tell me, what was it that drove you to dedicate hours and hours and hours and hours and hours and hours writing?
Well, I can attribute all the biggest, best things in my life, certainly professionally and even personally, to some very big mindset shifts that I had. And I did not make those shifts on my own. I had incredible coaches. I read books. I studied with some of the top mindset teachers in the country. And so it's really a desire to make more accessible these mindset teachings that really until now you had to go to an ashram in India or spend thousands of dollars or go to these retreats. And I wanted to make these eight essential mindset practices that are so useful in business and in life, but especially in business, easily accessible to anyone who wants to improve their mindset and get what I call the go big mindset, which I just describe as a set of beliefs that allows you to stay positive, overcome any obstacle, and reach your goals. That's the go big mindset.
Love it. So with respect to mindset, I know some people, there's probably a nature versus nurture argument that comes in here for a moment. I just want to unpack that for a moment. I know that mindsets, you'll say, are probably elastic and so on and so forth, but are people born with some sort of genetic coding that kind of predisposes them to a more optimistic mindset or a go big mindset, to use your language? And for those that perhaps are not program that way, what can be done to help them get that way?
Yes, mindset is very flexible and very teachable in the sense that, sure, you're born with a certain disposition, a bit of optimism, a bit of resilience. Perhaps in your family, there's a history of depression or anxiety or something that's making it a bit more challenging for you. There certainly is in my family. I wrote about that in Go Big Now. We have OCD, we have depression, we have anxiety, we have people who've joined cults, people who've committed suicide. Like, I was not dealt the best mindset hand of cards, I must say. But through intentional practice, through learning what some of the top leaders and CEOs and successful people do from a mindset perspective, you can absolutely have a more resilient mindset. And some of the best things to do are the ones I mentioned in the book. Like, for instance, I start with the very first mindset teaching is something I call Mind the Gap. So Mind the Gap is based on what you hear in the tube in London, right? If you're waiting for the tube, you know what I'm talking about. Mind the Gap.
Mind the Gap.
And it's a little reminder to create a little bit of space between what happens to you and the meaning you make of it. Now, for most people, that's an instant process, right? Someone says something to you in a meeting, you don't hear back from an email you sent, you apply for a job, you get rejected, you're immediately making all kinds of meaning, and you don't even think you have a choice. You know, of course, that means that you bombed the interview if they didn't call you back, right? Of course, if they didn't hire you, then maybe your company is going to be sinking and this is the end of the world or whatever it is. We all do it. But if you have a bit of mindset training, you're able to just create a little bit of space, and as you get better at it, a lot of space, between what happens to you and the meaning you make of it. And this just happened to me last week. I was interviewed for a live news show here in New York, and it was a great interview, had a lot of fun. And then the following week, it was supposed to air on Monday. So Monday, I told a bunch of friends, we got the TV up and running, sat down in front of it, you know, oh, no, it didn't air, right? Oh, what happened? So immediately my brain went to, did I bomb the interview? Did she not like it? Was there something more important that happened? Did they decide to pull it? All of these negative thoughts came flooding in. And then I remembered my mindset training, right? And I said, wait a minute, you don't even know why they didn't run it, right? Yeah. There's no point in going there. So I created that little gap and actually was able to set it aside. And then 2 weeks later, a couple of days ago, the piece ran. It turns out they had some other things they had to do before that, and everything was fine. But without that mindset training, you can really run very far down a path that does not serve you and can actually sink you, not to keep going back to the scuba diving metaphors.
I think we're going to have a lot of those metaphors come up through the whole conversation. I think I created something.
There's a theme now. I hope you put like a shark image with this interview or something.
Well, given you like diving, given this is a dental podcast, we've got Nemo images kind of going everywhere around as well.
That's right. That was a big scene in Finding Nemo. I love it.
It was a big scene. There's actually a few dental jokes in there too when the fish are arguing over which root canal files. Anyway, I'm getting into dental geekery. I'll leave that alone. But coming back to Mind the Gap, because you're absolutely right. I know in my own life as well, I've been prone to reacting rather than having that pause and be able to then consciously respond and to attach meaning to things that may not be there. And what I wanted to ask you is, how do you create the practice of minding the gap? Because the old habit will be hardwired, it'll become a neural pathway. And how do we practice minding the gap?
Well, one, by practicing, right? Yeah. Catching yourself, having those thoughts. And the very first thing is just to realize that you have a choice, right? Mm-hmm. Most people who have not done mindset training don't understand that you actually can make another choice. So I give you a little three-step process. You can go, I'm a business coach, so everything in the book is very practical and tactical. This isn't sort of a woo-woo mindset book of, you know, light candles and meditate and all that. No, this is, how can you put this into action? There's actually a 10-page workbook that you get for free with the book on my website. But in terms of Mind the Gap, I ask you to do three things, which is one, ask, what are the facts? Two, what is the meaning I'm making of them? And three, is there a more empowering meaning I could choose instead? Because often we go right to the most negative possible thing. We actually have about 6,000 thoughts a day. And do you have any idea what percentage of them are negative? What would you guess? What percentage do you think are negative?
Oh, gosh, I really don't know. So I'm going to have a guess. I have a feeling I'm going to underestimate. I was going to say 2/3.
2/3. Okay, now you're asking me to do math. That's not fair.
65%. Thank you.
Yeah, so you lowballed it a little bit. It's 70 to 80%. So 70 to 80% of our thoughts every day are negative. So if you're listening thinking, you know, well, I think it's just me. I just tend to catastrophize or think the worst thing could happen. No, it's everyone. And so this is part of why mindset training is so important. You know, it reminds me a little bit of when I adopted this puppy. I had this puppy that I adopted for my children. I have two boys who are 13 and 16 now. And of course, I wound up walking the puppy. So I'm out walking the puppy on the New York City street. And what does the puppy do? But immediately want to, you know, put his nose in the garbage and wrap himself around the lamppost and do all these things. So I had to like get a little tug on the leash, right? Like, no, no, come back. We're not going to eat the empty beer can right now. We can do the same thing with our thoughts. Our thoughts naturally want to go to these negative places, just like the puppy wants to go put his nose in the garbage. But if you have some mindset training, you can give a little tug on the leash, right? And you can say, wait a minute, is that really the only meaning I can make of this? So that's a very simple one. That's the one I start with, because that's like easy peasy stuff, as my, you know, kids would say. And a slightly more advanced level, as you move through the book, you learn how to do what's called busting limiting beliefs. So a limiting belief is the belief that you have, an unconscious belief that limits you, that prevents you from doing something you might want to do. So for instance, you might have the limiting belief that because your parents only made X amount of money, that you couldn't possibly make more money than that. Or because you didn't go to one of the top universities, that your career can only go so far. Yeah. Or because you weren't the best student in high school, you couldn't possibly be the leader in your field. These are all limiting beliefs, and we all have some. And if you're listening, wondering, well, how do I know if I have a limiting belief? If you look around at your life, at everything you have and what you don't have, all the things you have an empowering belief behind them. Mm-hmm. Because there's only two kinds of beliefs, empowering and limiting. And everything you don't have has a limiting belief behind it. So if you want to get more of what you want, you need to do the mindset work of, or in my experience, it's important to do the mindset work of looking at what are my limiting beliefs and how can I uproot them and replace them with more empowering beliefs in order to get different results. Have you ever seen that happen with anybody in your community where they had like a big belief that was kind of getting in their way?
Totally. One of the things that we see, we're a business coaching company as well. And so one of the things that we really are focused on is helping people earn more money while working less time. But one of the things that can sabotage people in that process is their beliefs around money. If I grew up in an area where money was scarce, for instance, maybe I've got issues around, do I deserve this money? Does that make me a bad person? Does that mean I'm no longer interested in the care of my patients because I'm trying to earn a living? All of those sorts of beliefs tend to undermine one's ability to create financial abundance for themselves. And so we see that a lot. And in fact, a lot of the work we do is actually uncovering people's beliefs, particularly around money, we find.
Oh, I love that you do that, because the truth is you can't just go in and teach skills without working on mindset first. I really think of mindset as the foundation on which you build your mansion, right? And you can't build a mansion on quicksand. You have to have a solid foundation. And so that's great that you go in and do that mindset work. Another thing that comes up sometimes with these limiting beliefs is something I talk about in the book called competing commitments. Ooh. Which is that you might have an expressed conscious desire to, let's say, make a lot more money in your business, but you might have a competing unconscious commitment to something else. So for instance, people who were raised in a community where, let's say, it was very religious, and it was thought that people who made a lot of money kind of did a deal with the devil. You know, I'm kind of exaggerating here. It might be something less extreme. So the person might say, I want to have $1 million business, but unconsciously, they have a competing commitment, which is the commitment to not be the kind of person who does a deal with the devil, right? That's been socialized into them. And so sometimes if we don't uncover these competing commitments, they can completely sabotage all your well-laid plans, because you're actually more attached to the competing commitment than your conscious verbalized goal. So these are the kind of mindset things that I help my clients work on, and that people can work on all by themselves in reading my book, Go Big Now.
One of the things I wanted to ask you around mindset, and we understand that it is flexible, it can be trained, it can be worked on. I'm an impatient person, Julia, right? And sometimes that has served me well. Often it has not served me well, but I'm a relatively impatient person. And what I wanted to ask you is, if you go and do the mindset work, clearly that's going to have some benefits, a lot of benefits, a huge amount of benefit. But for me personally, I've been working on mindset for years and years and years, but I know at various points in my life, I've become impatient with myself, or I haven't kind of broken an old habit or an old belief system as quickly as I thought I should. Can you just talk to me about A, being patient with yourself, perhaps B, being kind with yourself, and C, how long does all this process take? Is it a lifelong journey, do you think, or is it?
Can you're we not going to like wins? The answer.
I had a feeling that was going to be the case.
It's not a once and done. No. I mean, I still work on mindset every single day, yeah. And I'm a trained NLP master practitioner. I'm a mindset expert, and I still do all these practices every single day. But at the same time, it goes deeper, right? Each year, and you feel more at peace. And I will share that when the pandemic hit and we found out we were going to be locked in our homes for an indefinite period of time and that all our loved ones might die, right? It really paid off that I had been studying mindset for the last 10 years. I felt the benefits of that serenity I'd created for myself. And also I was lucky my kids are a bit older. I wasn't homeschooling them or anything. So I was able to spend the whole pandemic coaching other people and helping them through it, right? Because I had done all this mindset work. The good news is all the time you put in will pay off and is already paying off. And we'll call this the good news too. It's a lifelong journey, right? Mindset.
Yep.
At the same time, I hope that you're already feeling, you know, how different you are from, say, 5 years or 10 years ago from having done that work. Like, what's one thing that you think is different for you because of mindset?
I think probably my own beliefs around my ability. I had some limiting beliefs around whether or not I could achieve certain things in life. And I've had to go back and do the work and understand why I had that belief and try and work through that. So certainly I've been able to achieve things that I never thought I would have been able to achieve before. Podcasting is one. I'm a naturally shy person. It took me a long time to overcome. I'm a natural.
So you had to bust that limiting belief, right? Like that limiting belief might have sounded like in your head is, I'm a shy person. I'm not comfortable meeting a lot of strangers, so I couldn't possibly have a podcast. But you obviously blew right through that. So nicely done. The other thing I wanted to mention is, since you said I'm impatient, and I can totally relate, right? As an entrepreneur, we always want it done yesterday.
Yeah.
When should it be ready? Yesterday, it should be ready. Mm-hmm. I have a whole chapter in the book on self-compassion. And this is something that is very personal for me because I drive myself very hard. I'm very type A. I've, you know, very high goals for myself. And I got to a place where I got so burned out that I almost passed out in the airport in LaGuardia. They had to like go get a wheelchair and put it under me. It was that bad. And I wrote about that in the book. But it was a good wake-up call for me that I was not very good at self-compassion. And it's actually a term I wasn't even familiar with. I was on the internet kind of looking for a retreat. And I went to the website of a wellness center I like, and they said, okay, a full weekend on self-compassion. I thought, I don't know what that is, but I have a feeling I do the opposite of it. That was exactly what I thought when I read about the workshop. Took that workshop, total game changer. I then based an entire chapter on it in the book because, you know, the shadow side of achievers, and most of us as entrepreneurs are high achievers, right? Who's crazy enough to have their own business and take on all that risk and do what we do. We all tend to be high achievers and fairly type A. The shadow side is usually not very good at taking care of ourselves and having a lot of self-compassion. So I think that's something we need to start talking about more in the entrepreneurial community. There's actually a very high suicide rate in the entrepreneurial community. There's a high depression rate. So these are all things that I'm hoping as wellness and business meet more, and my book Go Big Now is certainly part of that, that we'll have more of these conversations and figure out how to be kinder to ourselves as we build big, successful, game-changing businesses.
Can we talk a little bit about expectations around that? Because you've spoken about type A personalities, and dentists are renowned for precision, perfection, type A type of people. And you want that precision and perfection in your clinical work, but that spills over into other areas of your life. And my thinking around dentists, and again, I stand to be corrected, but dentistry either attracts people predisposed to that or you become that. And I don't think you survive in dentistry if you don't have either that nature or you learn to
develop. I don't want your dentist to be type A. I don't think I want my dentist to be a slacker.
Totally exactly right. That's exactly right.
That works out well. But so what's the shadow side? Tell me.
Well, the shadow side is that we set exacting standards for ourselves we tend to work in a very binary world where it's perfect or it's wrong. It's either, I remember at university, I'd either do something that was brilliant or wrong. And there wasn't a graduated scale between brilliant and wrong. What that equates to is it can lead to being hard on yourself, and we've spoken about self-compassion, but it can also not just spill into dentistry, but into other areas of your life, and indeed your expectations of other people as well. We tend to then take expectations on ourselves and project them onto other people. So I wondered if we could have a bit of a conversation about expectations and how to create realistic expectations in the context of being compassionate and self-compassionate to ourselves and to others. Do you have any thoughts around that?
Well, it's interesting you bring that up, because one of the other top mindset practices of successful leaders and CEOs, which is one of the things I'm trying to share in the book, is, you know, what do successful people do from a mindset perspective, since we rarely talk about that. One of the top practices is having written goals, having very intentional goals. And yet the other piece of it is not being too attached to how you get there, right? Being very, very committed to the goal and the outcome, but being very flexible in their approach. And I lived this myself when I launched Million Dollar Women, my prior book, about 5 years ago. I remember I had this vision of this book tour and campaign and all these corporate underwriters and national driving across the country, blah, 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 did this big PowerPoint presentation, pitched it to all these corporations, and couldn't get it funded and felt like a total failure. And then I just stuck it in the back of my file cabinet. It was back when you actually had hard files. Everything was in Google Doc. And what's fascinating is 3 or 4 years later, I found that file in the back of my drawer and I pulled it out and I looked at that PowerPoint and what I wanted to achieve with that campaign running around the country. And I realized that I was trying to reach thousands of women across the country. Well, what was I doing when I pulled that file out? I was teaching thousands of women across the country through my online programs. And furthermore, talk about competing commitments. When I did that whole pitch of doing the national campaign, I had just gotten divorced. And I knew I was only going to see my children, my two boys, half the week. The last thing I wanted to be doing was traveling around the country, spending nights away from home, not spending time with them. So in retrospect, I actually think I had a competing commitment that if I had gotten that funded, because probably I could have pushed through and gotten it funded, it would have meant many nights away from my children, not living up to my expectations of myself as a mother, which is so dear to me. And it also wasn't the only way of getting there, right? It turns out I was able to reach thousands of women through an online program. So that's what I'm talking about with being very determined in the outcome, but flexible in the approach.
Do you think with competing commitments that we run the risk of self-sabotage, in the sense that, yeah, my experience is that business people, entrepreneurs don't grow into pain. And if we associate that growth with some pain along the way, I'm surmising here, I could be totally wrong and I might be putting my ladder up the wrong tree. But if you're thinking, I want to run this book tour and go to all these different cities, and then sitting there somewhere is the thought, I'm recently divorced, I don't want to miss my boys. Do we subconsciously self-sabotage?
1,000%. Absolutely. You're dead on. Absolutely. And that is why it's called a competing commitment. You're actually competing with the thing you really want with this other commitment. And so you sabotage the thing you said you wanted because you have another loyalty that is unconscious to this other thing, such as being a good mom, spending time with your kids. So yes, absolutely. And that's why this mindset work is so important. You know, as a coach, I see so many people who are not pursuing their dreams, the bigger version of themselves, all because they haven't taken the time to shine a spotlight on what's happening in their unconscious. You know, we think we're making all these decisions all day long, but in fact, the unconscious drives the show, right? Your unconscious is making decisions all day and then feeding them up to you as truth, reality. And you can actually undo a lot of that with some intentional mindset work. And as I say in one of my chapters, deal yourself a new hand, right? We were all dealt a certain hand. What your parents said, what you were taught in school, what your religion said, all that becomes an amalgam that makes up your mindset without you even knowing it. Everybody has a mindset, right? You just haven't looked at what yours is, perhaps. But if you get intentional about it, you can feed your mindset very positive things, very positive messages, and learn how to really chart your own course and create your own destiny.
I wanted to ask you about pushing versus surrendering, because again, we're talking to a cohort of people on this show who are inherently driven, type A personalities, push through. And as you said, you could have pushed through with your competing commitments before. I wanted to ask you, when is it time to push and when is it time to surrender?
Yes, that's a great thing to ponder. I do think it's important to understand what are the feelings that you're going after that are underneath your goals, because that will help you make those decisions. In one of the books I cite in my book, because I did cite some of the top mindset teachings that I found valuable so that you don't have to go read those books and take those workshops and spend those thousands of dollars. And one of them is a book that was very meaningful to me called The Desire Map. And The Desire Map is a book about what are the feelings that you're looking for behind the goals you set? Because sometimes we set these goals, you know, I want to make $1 million. I want to travel to every country in the world. I want to become the top earner. And then you get there and you're not actually any happier than you were. And in fact, maybe you sacrificed a whole bunch of things along the way that were actually meaningful to you, like time with your children, connections, friendships. So the desire map takes you through an exercise, which I repeated in my book, so you can get it in there, where you map out the feelings you're going for, and then you map the goal on top of that. And what's helpful in that is that when you come to a crossroads where you're like, okay, do I push through? Or is this out of alignment with what do I really want? You already have a clear set of feelings that you're going after. She calls them your core desired feelings. So for instance, after I did this exercise, I found out that my core desired feelings were joy, connection, and abundance. Those are the three feelings I want to have over and over and over again in my life. So if I'm asked to give a talk or fly around the world to do something and I'm hesitating about whether it's worth it, I can ask, okay, does this meet the filter, right? Is it going to be joyful? Am I going to feel connected to others? Does it add into the abundance feeling in my life? And if it meets those criteria, I'll say yes. But if it's like not going to be that fun, right? Maybe it's for some corporation I don't share values with. I'm not going to have a bunch of joy speaking to them. Does it help with connection? No, I'm not friends with any of these people. I'm going to fly in, fly out. It's going to be very cold. And abundance, maybe they're not even paying that well, right? That doesn't add to abundance. Or maybe there's nothing fun I can tack on. You know, I'm not going to get to go scuba diving after, which will add to a feeling of abundance. Well, then that's going to be a no. So having this filter is extremely helpful. And one of the things that I'm very excited to teach in Go Big Now.
Yeah, fantastic. I love that. Because I know certainly in my life, I've been a pusher. And so sometimes for me, the more appropriate course might have been for me to surrender at various times. But I've been that dog with a bone that's kind of just pushed through. And you're right. I think there have been times where I've pursued the goal at the expense of the underlying feeling and may have sacrificed some things that were meaningful along the way. And as I've gotten older, I've hopefully accumulated a little bit of wisdom and come to recognize that. And so now I'm learning the art of just reevaluating how much I want to push through. And it's been an interesting thought exercise for me, because what I'm noticing is as I get older, my priorities shift, my desires change. And so things I might have pushed for 5 years ago, 10 years ago, I just let go now. Things that might have upset me 5 or 10 years ago, I let go now. But equally, I'm more driven in some areas as well. So it's been an interesting observation.
Thank you for asking that question. That's a really interesting question, right? Of when to push and when to surrender. I do think having some kind of filter to put things through is helpful. And then there's also learning from your past experience, right? Thinking of times when you push through and said, wait, was that really worth it?
Yeah, totally, totally.
And it does connect to the being kind to yourself as well. I really hope that listeners will take seriously this notion of self-compassion, especially if you identify as a type A or perfectionist or like me, recovering perfectionist, to really pay some attention to that. Read that chapter in my book and maybe read some other books about self-compassion. It's been a game changer for me.
I think self-compassion is a huge topic. I wanted to just switch gears for a second, because you have worked a lot with female entrepreneurs and we have a pretty even split of our audience. We have a lot of men that listen to our podcast, but equally we have a lot of women that listen to our podcast. And one of the things that I wanted to ask you about is from entrepreneurialism from a female perspective. I like to think I can empathize, but there are some things that my empathy can't extend to being a different person's gender. So I wanted to just begin the conversation around this was, what struggles do you think that female entrepreneurs encounter that frankly men don't? And what do you think female entrepreneurs wished that men understood better?
Oh, I wish more people would ask that question. What a great thing to ask. So thank you for asking it. you know, studies show that men are way more likely to put themselves out there for opportunities that they're not even sure they're qualified to do, right? If a man feels like he has something like 50% of the qualifications for a job or an experience or a position, he'll raise his hand and say, let me do it. I'll figure it out. Whereas for women, we tend to want to feel 80 to 90% confident that we can do the thing before we raise our hand to do it. And I think that's a big, big difference between men and women. You know, when you go to gatherings of women, which I spend a lot of my time in gatherings of women, we sort of marvel at men, you know, putting themselves out there for doing things they just have no idea how to do, right? But it doesn't stop them. Whereas we tend to be the exact opposite. And so I think in entrepreneurship, it's important to recognize that for women, because as women, we can help each other, and some great guys can help us too. We have a lot of wonderful men in our Million Dollar Women community on our board, as mentors, as advisors, and to give women that little push and encouragement, right, to take some of those risks that they might not take if left to their own devices, whether that's, yeah, take out the loan, like you've got this, right? Expand your business, you're going to be fine, right? Or apply to give that talk. A woman will sometimes sabotage herself in her head, right? And say, well, who am I to give that talk, right? Who am I to pitch for that business? Who am I to say that our business, you know, should be nominated for the Dentist of the Year award in my community or whatever? And that's a big difference I see between men and women.
I feel like I'm trying to listen in on secret women's business in a sense. But what about the juggling home life, juggling business life? And I know men do that juggle too, but my experience is women seem to do the juggle more than men. Now, that may be the case. It may not be the case. I might be completely wrong. But I'm just curious to understand what that juggle is like, and then how to get through that and how to focus on the areas in all the different areas of one's life, you know, whether it's family and being a mom or a dad, and then being able to still nurture your business and grow that, and not so much competing interests, but to have those priorities all managed.
Yes. Well, I know that when I was in my 20s and I went to meet professional women, because I already knew I wanted to have like a big career, but I also knew I wanted to have a family. So I went to interview some women who were in their 40s who had families and had big jobs. And I remember several of them said to me, oh, you know, Julia, it's really tough. Like when I'm at home, I feel like I should be at work. And when I'm at work, I feel like I should be at home. And I just remember walking out of their offices thinking, that is so depressing. I don't want to feel like that ever, right? I want to have a big career and a big family life. And as ridiculous as this is, we are the first generation, my generation, I'm in my early 50s with teenage boys, to have a big career and a big family life, right? My mother had a job, but she didn't have a big career. That wasn't really available to her. So for me, the secret is to, one, really choose the things that matter to you and make those non-negotiable, right? I always read to my kids before bed. I always made dinner. I always took them on nice vacations. But did I also join the PTA? No, right? Did I also take them to school every morning? No, I took them to school a couple of mornings and had a hired babysitter who took them the other days, or my husband took them the other days. So to choose the things that really matter and give up the rest, because while of course there are gender inequities and books have been written about that, and I won't go into it, you know, women are still doing a lot more of the child raising and household chores. I think that the real work for women to do right now is to be willing to give up some of the control and to delegate and to be comfortable with, hey, you know, my job as a mom is not to be here every minute. Because even if you had a stay-at-home mom as a role model, if you are an entrepreneur, that is just not possible. You cannot be the mom your mother was and run a business. So I'm all about us embracing that. I actually wrote an ebook called Million Dollar Mom that's available for free on my website. So if any women are listening who want a little support on this, it's about creating boundaries and making sure that you can be the kind of mom you want to be and run a big, successful, multi-million dollar business if that's what you want to do. And I co-wrote it with my children.
Love
so
it.
They could keep me in check.
Totally. The thing I love about that, because my darling wife is fantastic. I'm one of those people that married very well. They say if you get the big decisions in life right, you're kind of on the way. And
you have your Michelle Obama. Nicely
done. I have
done.
My Michelle Rob. Obama. She is my wife Miranda is fantastic. But I would say that there is some guilt that comes with letting go of some things. You know, it's ingrained. So again, I don't want to labor this point. I don't want to make more of it. But for the women listening to that, I know that they'll say, I get the priorities. I understand I should let things go and just do the things that are kind of in my lane. how can we let go of things in a guilt-free way?
I'm all about the spreadsheet. When I was married,
you've just officially spoken my love language when you said spreadsheet.
Right? Excel spreadsheets are the solution to everything. So my ex-husband and I, this is not why we divorced. We divorced quite amicably, happily. Been divorced about 5 years. But when we were together and we were looking at all the things they needed doing in the household, we were both running businesses. We just made a spreadsheet with all the things that had to get done every week. And we looked at, okay, who's doing more of the things? And there's so much invisible work, right? When you have children, like who looks at the wardrobe of the children every time the season changes to figure out how many pair of pants do they need? Where do we put away the old clothes? Who do we give them to if they've outgrown them? That's all invisible work. Like I don't know very many men who do that, right? So I was doing that and he didn't even know I was doing that until we made a spreadsheet. So make a spreadsheet and then divvy it up evenly. Right? If it's not divided up evenly, move some things to another column. That's my
love
advice.
It. Love it. Nothing says I love you like a spreadsheet in my world anyway.
Here, here. And I can see we were meant to meet.
We were meant to meet. I love Excel spreadsheets. I probably need some therapy for that. But anyway, that's a whole conversation right there.
I'm a recovering perfectionist and you're a recovering spreadsheet addict.
Exactly. I wanted to just come back to, as we wrap up our conversation, I can't let this last piece go unremarked upon, but on your website is a blog post, Why Fixing Your Teeth is Like Fixing Your Business. I can't not talk about that because clearly this is a dental podcast, a dental business podcast. And so can you just talk us through the concept?
Will you
there?
Even believe me that that was not on purpose and it went live today? Isn't that crazy?
How serendipitous is that?
It's fantastic. The backstory there is that during the pandemic, I decided to do Invisalign, or actually I did a different version of it, but the same idea, right? Those clear retainers. Mm-hmm. And the thought process I went through before I went for it, I realized after I was all done 6 months later, was so similar to the thought process that the business women I coach go through when they're trying to decide whether or not to get business coaching. Because just to go back to the teeth, right? I noticed that my teeth were crooked and they were only getting more crooked every year. Yeah. But I went into kind of the five stages of grief, right? Denial, anger, right? So it started with like, no, this isn't happening. It's not that bad, right? Oh, see, in that picture, they don't actually look crooked.
Yeah.
Right. The one of the 10 pictures. And then you do anger. Why is this happening to me? I actually did Invisalign 10 years ago. What do you mean they moved? I don't want to do this again, right?
Yep.
And then eventually you get around to taking action, right? And that's when you decide, okay, I have to see someone about this. And in my case, as an orthodontist, for businesses, they reach out to a coach when they realize, you know what? The business is not going to fix itself, right? Being angry about it, that you're losing money or you're not making as much money as you want to make, that's not getting you anywhere. And eventually you go seek the help. And I sought the help of an orthodontist. And when she said it's going to take 6 months, I almost said, oh, forget it. That's too long. I can't spend 6 months on this. But I did. And now I'm so glad I did. It went by so quickly. And I happened to run a 4-month business program. So yeah. I know for a lot of the women, when they hear, wait, 4 months, I have to study for 4 months. But at the end of the 4 months, they've doubled their revenues. They're on track to making $1 million. And they're very happy with the result. So that's the parallel. I've just given away the entire blog post. But if you want to see my crooked teeth, and the before and after, go check it out at juliapimza.com on the blog.
Funny you should say, because when we're talking off air, you know, you said, did you see the pictures? And I was going, of course I saw the pictures. Old habits die hard. I don't practice as much these days, but I did zone in and really have a look at the before and after photo. So good on you for getting it done. I think you'll be very,
Thank you very much. For doing it. I will take all the compliments because I put in all the work.
Too right. Exactly. And so you should. Julia, you have been really, really generous with your time today. Now, for those people that want to get a hold of the book, Go Big Now, is the best place to go your website, juliapimza.com?
It's on Amazon. It's on Audible. It's where books are sold. We have links to all those places at juliapimza.com. And if you go to the Go Big Now tab at juliapimza.com, and Pimsleur is spelled, if you're listening and driving, P-I-M-S-L-E-U-R. We have a little sneaky U in there, Pimsleur. I have some French origins. You can also take our free Go Big Mindset assessment to get a little sense of, you know, where am I at on this journey, right? Because a Go Big Mindset, just to repeat, is a set of beliefs that allows you to stay positive, overcome any obstacle, and reach your goals. And so take our little free assessment, find out where you're at. And then if you buy the book, please do download the free workbook. And after you do all those exercises, I guarantee there's one thing that's going to be just a huge aha and will change your life and perhaps those the life of those you love. So I'd love to hear about it. Please, you know, follow me on social media and let me know how that goes.
Fantastic. Well, ladies and gents, do go ahead and get the book. I know it'll really change your life. There's been incredibly interesting talking to you today, Julie. You're obviously a wealth of knowledge. You've done the internal work so you can do the external work, and it shows that you're living a big life, and I really appreciate you for paving the way for so many others to follow. So thank you so much for all your work.
Thank you. This was such a joy. Thanks for having me on.
It's been a treat. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast with Dr. Jesse Green. For more free tools and resources, join the free Facebook group. Visit drjessegreen.com/Facebook. And for more episodes, visit drjessegreen.com/Savvy Dentist.